Welcome to Unfiltered. I'm your host, Sarah Jane Foster, and today we have the pleasure of sitting down with none other than the chart-topping country music sensation, Nathan Carter.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Now, let's get straight into it. You've always struck me as somebody who's really, really confident. Have you always been this confident, or do you even see yourself that way?
I don't actually see myself that confident. I'd say my brother Jake is a lot more confident than I would be.
Right.
But then I suppose if you're on stage, you have to be, you know, the star of the show.
Yeah.
So there is, like, me off stage is quite a bit different to me on stage.
All right, in what way?
Just, if I go into a pub or a restaurant, I'm sitting in the corner being very quiet and just enjoying, you know, the crack.
But yeah.
Whereas when you're on stage, you have to be like...
like a character.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's the thing with famous people, I find that you... like, people always perceive you, not you, but people in general in the public eye, a little bit different than what you actually are. So just like what you're saying there.
People get an impression, yeah, which generally isn't the person on stage to off stage.
Yeah.
But then that's why it's show business, I guess.
For sure. Yeah. So what are misconceptions that people have of you?
Misconceptions...
yeah. So, like, I feel like people see you as this, like,
well,
good boy, I'm going to say.
Yeah, probably. people do probably perceive me as, well, I was in the choir growing up.
Okay.
And then, you know, I would have been an altar boy and gone to mass every week. And then, I don't know, people would get a certain impression from that. But
yeah,
it's not always me, you know.
Right.
I do love a good night out and we have plenty of them. And then I suppose... I'm big into cars, which a lot of people wouldn't presume I would be.
Yeah.
Not that I am a mechanic by any stretch of the imagination, but I'd know an awful lot about cars and models and makes and engines and, you know, what's coming out and what's in at the minute. And then I suppose coming from Liverpool, everyone would presume that I, like, it's a question I'm asked all the time, are you blue or are you red?
Okay.
Are you Liverpool or Everton? And I haven't a notion about football. I couldn't tell you who Liverpool's manager is, who's the captain of Everton. I couldn't tell you anything. But of course, being from Liverpool, it's the first thing everybody asks.
Go back to you being an altar boy. So then are you religious?
Brought up Catholic, but I wouldn't be a practicing Catholic at all. You know?
Okay, so people have this perception of you then that you're like this, you're this kind of...
Holy Joe.
Holy Joe, okay. So what were you like then as a child then? Like, were you...
I was just surrounded by music. Like, I was in the choir. I entered all the Flarky Olds playing accordion in the Cayley band, Lilton singing, Groupie Cole, you name it. I was involved in everything trad growing up. And then that was one side of it. There was me singing choral stuff with the choir. And then there was a load of country music on in the house.
Right.
People like Foster and Allen, you might not have heard of them, funny enough, but and Brennan Shine, and then American singers like Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Right, okay, because they say like the people that like our parents listen to really, really influence us. So that's so interesting.
Without
that
doubt, yeah.
Yeah, Foster and Allen and Brennan Shine, you grew up listening to them. That's crazy.
Just on in the background in the house.
Yeah.
And all my friends are into Oasis and Eminem.
Right, okay. What's
and
your
I'm banging freaking tunes out to Foster and Allen.
What's your favourite Foster and Allen song?
After all these years, I actually sing that. If someone's got a big anniversary at our gig, I sing After All These Years for them.
Yeah, and I've actually seen you perform.
I always say, this is Foster Allen song. And I recorded this when I was 14, which is only 2 years ago now. Standard all the time. And this is for the happy couple.
So, oh, that's so lovely. I actually have seen you perform that and it was so beautiful.
Cheers, thanks.
Yeah.
Good tune, well-written song. And touches a lot of people who've been together for many years, you know.
And so Foster and Allen, you grew up listening to them. So is that why you started playing the accordion then? Because of all the people you've listened
Mick
to?
Mick Foster and Brennan Shine and all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
And then I used to get asked to play tunes at like the Christmas panto or...
Right.
I'd have to lug this massive accordion in and like all the lads...
It was bigger than you.
Yeah, the lads would be taking the piss all the time. Like,
like,
why didn't I just play something cool like a guitar or a... I don't know, saxophone or something. I had to play the accordion, but sure, listen, it is what it is.
It's funny that you mentioned that about like maybe when you started playing the accordion back then. I think that's so cool that you did do that. when everyone else, as you say, was like listening to Oasis and then playing the guitar, learning Wonderwall.
Yeah.
Do you know? And then you're there out on your own, because when you're younger, you just want to fit in. It's like an instinct, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I was the opposite, really. I just didn't seem to fit in with anything that my friends did.
Okay.
But I was so happy because I enjoyed music so much. And then I left school at 17, started to gig in pubs and bars and clubs.
Yeah.
And I was earning pretty good money.
Right.
That my friends could never make, you know, and I was getting paid really well, so.
I know, yeah.
I kind of shut them up then.
I'd say so. Go back to the flats. So you actually won a flat when you were about 15, is that
15,
right?
15, yeah, yeah. I won it in Donegal for traditional Irish singing.
Wow.
Yeah, and then I gave up after that.
Oh, right, okay.
Got my medal. I'm off.
Yeah. See you soon. You got to the top. See you later.
Yeah. It's only downhill for me. I'm going. Good luck.
Definitely wasn't that for you. And then was there something got to do with Mick Foster being at the Fla? And I don't know, did he see you playing at the Fla?
He was an adjudicator whenever I was like 12.
Did he give you the medal?
No.
Mick?
No.
Grandad, what happened? No.
Never let him live it down.
You're dead right. I wouldn't let him either then.
But then, funny enough, Fla TV, which is on every year at the All Ireland, me and Mick ended up playing tunes together on that about 5 years ago, and I sang a song and Mick backed me and we played a few tunes, which was great fun.
I love that.
We went for a feed of pints after. It was great.
Did you? Yeah,
really good. And Tony would ring me, Tony Allen, for anyone that doesn't know, would ring me once a week and just chat for half an hour, just about absolute nothing. You know? It's good fun.
So Nathan, go back to when you were in school then. Were you I know you said you left school when you were 17.
Yeah, yeah.
But go back to like when you were in class. Did you know that you wanted to be a musician?
Yeah, I remember being
really?
I don't know, like 4 in nursery, like sitting, there was music on the thing, like a cartoon show with a band playing, like all characters, and I just was obsessed with it and apparently wouldn't let them turn it off. I just kept wanting to watch music and sitting. I was mesmerized by it.
Really?
And just knew all through my, so lucky because all my friends didn't have a clue what they wanted to do. They
were
leaving school to go and do A levels or college or whatever, and they still didn't know what they wanted to do. And I'm like, I do, I just want to do music. So
wow.
I was so lucky because there's so many people don't know what they want until they're maybe late 20s, you know.
But even though people in their 30s are still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
So I think for anyone who does know what career they want.
Very lucky, yeah.
Yeah, big time. So who was in your house then when you were growing up?
Mum, dad. My dad's a builder.
Yeah.
Well, he's just retired. But mum worked for the council. And my nan had a guest house called the Real McCoy. And she ran our local parish club.
Right.
Where she used to drag me in at the weekend for communions, christenings, weddings, and I'd sit and play the accordion, sing a few tunes. Might have been 9 or 10, you know.
They'd
always slip me a fiver, and I'd be like, I want to do this all the time.
This is the job.
Great.
Oh, that's
buy
so interesting.
Buy loads of bacon fries and Diet Cokes. It's amazing.
That's hilarious.
And then my younger sister, Kira, she is 6 years younger than me. And then there's the baby, Jake, who's 8 years younger than me.
Right, okay.
And the two of them got into music as well because I was so obsessed with it. My mum and dad don't play music at all.
Okay.
But my granddad on both sides love music. We all came along and all of us generally are into music in some way.
And did they push you to do it or was it just like a natural gravitation?
My nan did. My nan was roped me in at every stage possible.
Right, okay.
I did about, 50 gigs a year and it was only 14.
Oh my god. You know. You're really close to your nan though, aren't you?
Yeah. Nan still comes on the road with us selling merchandise. Huh. So we're gigging in Enniskillen and Kilkenny this week, so she's flying over to come and do them. But she's been on the tour bus with us for 5 weeks in the UK.
Wow, I've actually seen you were
she's
putting
84.
Up you were putting up really funny Instagrams of her.
Yeah, she's nuts. She's nuts. And she just honestly doesn't think that she's that age. She just believes in her head that she's 22.
Yeah.
Like we'd, you know, if it was a Saturday night and we'd had a few gigs in a row, we'd say right after the gig, we're going to go out.
Yeah.
And then, so we'd be out in a pub or a bar. I mean, Nan would still be packing the merch. And I'm going, Nan, like, just, you know, leave it. Just the lads will give you, lads will pack up it away.
Yeah.
You go back the bus or get food. And she'd be like, no, I want to go to the nightclub. And I'm like, you're 84. You're not coming to a nightclub with us. She would. She'd turn up on her own.
Would she? That is so
funny.
Can't
stop her. Like.
But like, why? How come you're so close? Like, how did that happen?
I think it was just the B&B finished. She left the parish club as the manager.
Yeah.
The licensee. And then she had nothing to do. So I became
something to
her
do.
Focus. Yeah. And she was like, right, I'm going to sell your CDs and I'm going to look after the merch and I'm going to go with you everywhere on the road.
Yeah.
So we can't get rid of her.
Yeah.
She's just there to stay.
I love that. I've actually met her and she's such a lovely woman.
She's good crack.
Yeah, she really is. So she suits like she blends in so well with your team. Yeah. Everyone just absolutely. And your fans.
She's the first one they meet whenever they come through the door, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They all know her by name.
Yeah.
She knows a lot of them and she's become friends with a lot of them as well. So
yeah. So what would you do then if you weren't a singer?
Probably be a property developer or something like that. I'd love to get into that a bit more.
Okay.
So
I'm finding,
I love old houses and that sort of stuff and I'm like obsessed with grand designs. I've watched everyone. Really? Kevin MacLeod and location and all that stuff. So
yeah,
just love projects like that as well.
Yeah,
it interests me a lot.
Okay. So I'm finding your answers really interesting and really refreshing. Like, I feel like everything you're telling me, I'm like, oh, okay. And even, like, I'm doing that now, like, what other people would do when they're, like, looking at somebody that's in the public eye and you have this, like, you nearly pigeonhole people that you see on social media or on TV.
Yeah.
And you're like, I think they'd be like this. I'm like, and then you're like, I'm into property and, you know, you're into all of these things that I just didn't expect. Like, you're saying you're into cars.
Yeah.
I did know that, to be honest. And when I found out that you were into cars, I was like, you're really into cars. It's not like you're just like, oh yeah, there's a cool car. Like, you're really into them.
Yeah, I would know makes and models. And
yeah.
I was the kid at school buying Auto Car magazine every week and studying what new engines and models were coming out and everything. And I've been lucky enough to buy a load of cars through the years.
Yeah.
But I was never able to afford to keep them all at once.
Okay.
I'd have to buy one. And then if I wanted to buy another one, I had to sell that one to buy that one. So
yeah. Like normal people, Nathan.
Yeah, exactly. But then if someone asked me in an interview one time, oh, what are you driving now? And lucky enough, I had a Ford Tourneo van.
Okay.
As well as my other car. So I just said, I'm driving a Transit at the minute because it's handy for the lads, because I just felt so ashamed telling anyone what car I had at the time. but I must have owned about 40 vehicles in the last 10 years. But as I say, not all at once. I'd have to buy one and sell one and then buy another one.
Fair enough.
But obsessed with chopping and changing cars and switching it up. And always looking online. Always.
I'm going to ask you a really awkward question then. What car do you drive, Nathan? And if you lie, I'm going to hang you out to dry.
So, well, I've got a Range Rover at the minute. Yeah.
What else do you have, Nathan?
Don't ask me that.
Tell us right now. Because you know what? My uncle rang me up and he was like, this was a couple of months ago. And he was like, do you know what car Nathan Carter has? And I was like, no, tell me. And I was like, sorry, what? Say that again? So come on, tell us.
I own an old Bentley Mulsanne.
Hold on. This is like from the David Beckham documentary.
Yeah. Tell the truth now, Nathan. Tell the truth. What did you go to school in?
I actually can't cope. That is too funny.
Yeah, Bentley Mulsanne, and there's a little sports car there called an Audi R8, which I seen Zac Efron driving years ago, and I was always like, I want one of them.
Okay.
So, but I'm going to sell one of them soon, I think.
Can't keep on three. So what car are you driving today then?
Range Rover.
Love it. That is so cool.
Good old diesel.
Can't beat it. Yeah. But you also bought your nan a Mercedes, is that right?
I did, yeah, when she was 77 or 78. We'd had a really good year. And,
wow.
She'd always wanted a Mercedes because she used to work for Liverpool Football Club, driving around the players. And
did she?
Used to drive to London, collect their passports and all that sort of stuff for them. And Liverpool's manager at the time, Gerard Houllier. Okay. I don't know if you're into football. I'm certainly not. I don't have a clue.
No.
But she was driving him around in her like 20-year-old clapped out Honda Civic. It was literally, if he had stomped hard enough, his foot would have gone through the floor. And we'd had a good year. So I says, I'll get you a Mercedes. So I bought her a CLK. CLK 220, I think it was. Like two-door coupe.
Yeah.
Mercedes. And I was raging because we did film it just to keep for memory's sake, you know, yeah. And the footage never came out right. It was all like, I don't know, you just couldn't make out anything. So it was a shame. I don't have it anymore. But, and then Nan says now, sure, we'll have to film it again when you get me the new one.
No, oh my God, I love her. I love her. I understand that, like, you'd get uncomfortable speaking about stuff like that. Whereas I'm looking at you going, oh my good God, like, I think that's so incredible. Like, literally, most, like, not everybody, but most people, like, their dream car is a Range Rover. And then you, like, are literally buying all your dream cars and you're buying your nan her dream car. Like, that's an incredible achievement. Like, genuinely, it's so, so cool. And I think you should be more proud that you can actually do that. Like, you didn't get this handed to you. You literally work your arse off, and I know you do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, back then, I was doing 200 gigs a year. Yeah. Now I'm doing 100, maybe 110.
Wow.
But for the first 10 years, God, it was tough going. Like,
yeah.
I just didn't see anyone, or just life on the road all the time. Airports, vans, in and out of kitchens of hotels.
Yeah,
sneaking
I know.
In and eating yeah. after the gig. And
yeah, it's full
yeah,
on.
Just... But again, I loved it, so it wasn't...
I know.
If you had told me I was going on a building site for 5 days a week or do that for, you know, 200 gigs a year, the gigs all day long, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, you'd rather be, like, yeah. flat out doing gigs than just,
doesn't
like...
Doesn't bother me, yeah.
So when you started to become famous, did you notice people around you changing?
Not really, no. No,
I But didn't. Can I just say before you actually even answer that, I feel like when people think, like, change... When people mention change, that's a really negative thing. And I don't mean that, like, in a really negative way at all. But, like, surely you notice something, like, there's a bit more of a... Like, when a famous person walks into the room, like, you have a presence. Like, everything you do is amplified compared to if somebody else that just walked in the room that's just from down the road.
I know my friends that I hang around with, like, I've been mates with for maybe 12, 14 years, you know?
Yeah.
Whenever I released Wagon Wheel at the time and started being on TV a lot more, they couldn't get over the fact whenever we go for a meal or you'd be out, I don't know, at a cinema or whatever, the people staring. Like, there's that just like, and then they're pretending not to stare, but like constantly just, is it, you know?
I know what you mean.
You're just sitting trying to be as normal as possible.
And seeing me popcorn.
Like, you can feel these eyes like in the side of your head.
Yeah.
But they did find that a bit weird. And then selfies all the time. And wouldn't be everywhere, do you know what I mean?
Of course.
You know. And generally, if we're in the UK, we always end up in an Irish bar. So
everyone knows.
What are you going to expect? You know what I mean? So, but I've never, I don't think I've ever said no to a picture, ever.
Okay.
That I can remember.
Really?
Because, like, I met Rod Stewart about 2 months ago for the first time.
Yeah.
At a football game, and I didn't want to go over and ask him because I was so...
Why?
Like, I was just shy.
Okay.
Because I've grown up watching him. And,
okay.
And then I was like, oh, I'm going to annoy him if I go up. And then I was like, no, fuck it. You know?
Just do it.
I do it all the time. So, yeah. And I went up, and he was so sound. And then I was like, do you know what? Not that people feel like they're meeting Rod Stewart with me because they're clearly not. But I know how some people feel now if that's the person they love listening to or whatever, you know what I mean?
So okay.
I get it now. I get it.
Yeah.
And it's not a big deal to get a picture, like.
Yeah.
But poor Rod that day, like, he was tortured.
Really?
He was tortured. And I was just like, oh, he can't go anywhere, you know?
Sorry, you were talking there about your friends. So you actually have the same friends from, like, years?
For, like, 10 years, yeah. Since I moved to Enniskillen.
Okay.
I've had a lot of the same people around me for a long time.
So how old were you then? So when you moved from Liverpool, how old were you?
I was 19 when I moved to Donegal.
Oh.
And I was there for 3 years. And then I've been in Enniskillen for 11 years, 12 years.
So why did you move then from Liverpool?
I was offered a gig, a charity gig, and came over for Highland Radio, which is the big station up in Donegal. And David's on that, yeah. He's a presenter. And done that gig and met up with my old manager at that, and we decided to put a band on the road, and started doing dances, and then released Wagon Wheel, moved on to concerts, festivals, and it hasn't stopped since.
So sorry, you came over to Donegal and then you had gigs over there, and then you moved to Enniskillen then,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah.
So did you move over by yourself or did your family come?
No, I moved over on my own. I was 19.
Okay.
And I was the eldest of three leaving the home for the first time. So mum was very emotional, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Never left the house. So, but I knew I had to do it for once to...
progress.
Yeah, because I was gigging away in pubs and clubs on my own. And I wanted to get a band together.
In England?
In England.
Okay.
Yeah, all around the Irish pubs, the Irish centres in Manchester, Birmingham, London, Liverpool, all over.
Yeah.
And so I knew there was a bigger scene and thought, do you know what, I'll have a go.
Right.
If it doesn't work out, I'll come home and I'll do the gigs again that I was doing. So yeah. It's absolutely fine.
I know it was only across the water and you can look at that like, oh, it's only across the way. But still though, at 19, you're still very young and vulnerable.
I know, yeah. I was lucky enough I had good people around me. You know, all the lads in the band were much older than me.
So how did you meet them then?
We held auditions and put a band together.
Who's we?
Myself and John Farry, who was managing me at the time, and a guy called James McGarrity.
Okay.
Who was also managing. He was actually the manager, James. And then we got a guy, Jim McVeigh, who was a piano player. And we held auditions then and brought in a drummer, bass player, fiddle player, guitar player.
Right, okay.
And had pretty much the same band for about 5 years. And then we switched it up, brought in new younger lads. And then they stayed, some of them stayed 5-6 years. Some of them moved on, moved to different projects. And then, like, even recently, the fiddle player, he's left. So we're in the midst of bringing a new fiddle player. So the band changes every sort of... You go through a 5-6-7 year segment and then it seems to change.
Yeah.
Because lads get... You know, I'm very lucky that the lads I had around me were really talented, good lads. You know what
yeah.
I mean? But then I think there comes the end of a lifespan in any job. If you've done 6-7 years of the same stuff, gets a bit monotonous and a bit tiring. So... Yeah. Lads move on and you keep going, go again.
Yeah.
So, and it does, it freshens it up. But I have been lucky, I've had some really, really good musicians along the way, you know.
But you seem to have a really healthy approach with change. And the reason I bring that up is, I know you've parted ways with your manager, John
Farr.
Yeah. And like, I feel like, I heard when that came out, like you've seen it on the internet, and you know, you've seen the headlines. And I feel like people were like, oh my God, and people always want a drama, or like there must have been something big happening. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, and this goes for any like relationship breakup, whether it's with a romantic relationship or if it's with
business
yeah. or a friend.
Yeah.
And it's so common and people just shy away from it so much. But you seem to be very open with change, number one.
Yeah,
and then I also think as well, it's not a big deal to go your separate ways from somebody, no matter who it is. Like, if you've outgrown people, you've outgrown them, or whatever the reason is. But how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think there comes a lifespan in any operation, and sometimes you can just be together too long and you start annoying one another. Not that me and John or anything were doing that, but, you know, I wanted separate things to what he wanted. He wants to explore new TV avenues, go and do more stuff in the UK, try and crack a bit of America if we could, and we're just on slightly different wavelengths.
That's what you want or he wants?
That's what I wanted to do, you know, and that's what I've been trying to do the last few months. We've been, like, we got on Sky News and we got on BBC Breakfast in the UK, and, you know, I went out doing a big tour around the UK. But, you know, we were just on different, and we were together 14 years, and it was great, really, really good. We had some seriously good times, going from playing dance halls to playing the Olympia in Dublin, to then doing 3 nights in Vicar Street, then progressing to the Bord Gáis. Then we eventually done 2 gigs in the Three Arena.
Yeah.
Done the TV show. And I always kept aiming for more, 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 more. I wanted to get bigger and bigger and bigger, you know. And lucky enough, we achieved all of that.
Yeah.
And it was great. And things change and then we move on. And there was no major drama. Like, there was no fallout or, you know, we never had a crossword as far as I can remember. There'd be a few heated little discussions regarding stuff, but there was never a fallout, you know?
So,
which is great, because I can still pick the phone up and call them if there's an issue. Which is the way I think it always should be left. You can still, if you're stuck, if someone leaves, you still be able to pick the phone up and say, can you dig us out here? We need a bit of a hand.
Yeah, for sure. And he was with you when you were so young, so he probably knows you inside out and you know him inside out.
Yeah,
but I really appreciate you talking about that and saying that, because like I was saying earlier, people might hold on in general, I think, for longer than they probably should. and it's like a nervous thing, or a, like, I get it why people do hold on when you probably shouldn't, but I think equally letting go at the same time is so healthy for everyone. Like, you, and I really believe as well that you have to align with the people that you're working with. So can I ask, do you have a new manager?
I have a lady called Sharon Kelly who's running our office at the minute, and we've still the same promoters involved. We use Peter Aiken in Dublin, Belfast. Tommy Swarbrick has been doing a good few dates with us recently. We're trying out a few new promoters in Ireland at the minute over the next 6 months to see how that goes, who we've never worked with before, three or four of them, to see how they go. And I've still the same UK promoter, Kennedy Street, who've done our gigs for 10 years now.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Lakeland Interiors. And Lakeland Interiors actually gave me one of my first jobs when I first started at Chef Productions 7 years ago. They are your go-to destination for interior design solutions, from timeless elegance to modern flair. Lakeland Interiors specialise in creating spaces that reflect your unique style and personality. Visit their showroom or schedule a consultation today to transform your home into a masterpiece of design and comfort. Make sure to check out their website, lakelandinteriors.ie.
Your songs, do you write your own songs?
Generally wrote three or four on every album.
Yeah.
Co-wrote, you know, I work with different writers and I do a lot of the melody stuff. Sometimes come up with some of the hooks that some people would say, like, we were on tour and then the lads all went out for a night out and then woke up the next day and one of the lads shouts, "Jesus, this is the morning after the night before," and I was like, that's a line for a song. Then the following week wrote that song, you know what I mean?
Right, okay.
And then, yeah, written probably maybe 40 or 50 songs at this stage.
Wow.
Because I've done 11 albums now.
Yeah, that's insane.
If you work out, there's 4 songs generally written or co-written by me on every album. There's 40 or 50 songs, yeah.
That's insane. So I'm also fascinated when people say they write songs. I'm like, I need to visualize this. Like, what do you mean you write song? Like, where do you write it? Like, on your phone? Do you write it on a laptop?
Voice
do you write
note. Yeah, generally.
Voice notes.
Sitting at the piano. Oh, there's a melody. That shite, move on, next one. Yeah, there's something in that.
Hold on now, so record you get that. Rid of it if you don't even let other people hear it?
No.
Oh,
no, if I don't like it, I just
what, yeah. If you threw a load of number ones in the bin, you'll never know. Oh, Christ.
I'd say there's more. There's definitely no hope in that.
You never know though, to be fair. But okay, so you voice notes on your phone and
loads of voice notes on the phone, and then the notes page, little lines that people will have said along the way, and I've written them down. I was like, that'd be a good hook line, you know, for the end of a chorus or whatever, or the name of a song.
So do you write it from your own experiences?
Yeah, sometimes.
I always feel like I'm there going, if I was to write a song, like I used to think I was Avril Lavigne. I probably still do. Hello, like, I'm wearing Combats. Still think I'm Avril Lavigne.
Where's your BMX and your skateboard?
That's fine, all right? It's parked beside your Range Rover.
Is she hybrid or is she diesel?
She's hybrid. I used to write songs when I was younger, right? I think I actually still have a few of them. Now I'm talking like when I was like 12, 13 maybe, when I thought it was Avril Lavigne. But
This was last year.
Just last week there. Yeah, it was. Why are you always such a messer? But it's such a vulnerable like thing to write your own songs about your own situations.
Yeah.
So do you...
Like, I don't feel like I've been that personal though. I haven't gone like, oh, I'm gonna write about my breakup in 1999 when I was 8.
But why wouldn't you though? Just out of curiosity.
I don't know. I've just never been that deep, you know what I mean, in writing. Because I suppose the country thing is like,
you're too much of a messer.
It's the morning after the night before. You know what I mean?
You're so romantic, Nathan.
And then the songs I've written, the lads always used to take the piss because they're all always about places.
Okay.
So I like the boat to Liverpool, and then there's a song called Temple Bar, obviously it's about Temple Bar, and then My Own Island Town, which is a song about Enniskillen.
Right.
It's always about like places.
Okay.
Because I can write them a lot easier, you know, it's like street names, and I wrote a song called Liverpool.
What are you trying to say? You don't know the people like that you've been with their names?
No.
That's what you're saying. So I was going to say, you don't really get in too deep with your music then. You said it's all about places, so... I was going to ask you there.
Yeah, that's the way it's ended up. Yeah, I've never done like...
But do you ever think that you will?
Probably, yeah. Do just need the right idea or the right like
experience.
Yeah, to sit down and.
So do you feel like nobody has gotten that close to you then to like pull on your heartstrings to be like?
There's been no like major breakup that I.
Okay.
Yeah.
That you needed to write about.
Funny enough, Dolly wrote "I Will Always Love You" about her ex. singing partner.
Okay.
Who she was on a TV show with.
So you're going to write a song about John?
So I was to write a song about John Farrier. I Will Always Love You.
Oh my God. Imagine. I mean, every song that you're going to bring out now, I'm going to be like, I wonder, is that about John? Is that about John? Now, I'm going to ask about this. So I was saying about artists who write their own songs and they're putting yourselves in a vulnerable situation. Mm. You did actually write a song, Wings to Fly, about your friend Nicky James. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. To be fair now, that's probably the most, you know, I've done of heart-wrenching trying to get into writing a serious song.
Okay.
So Nicky James was a guy that was 61 or 62 when he died, but he'd mentored me from when I was like 15, got me all my first gigs in pubs, clubs. Basically a manager for like 3 or 4 years, and then I moved to Ireland. He came over and sat in on all the meetings, my first ever meetings, to make sure everything was above board, and then stayed in touch, recommended songs.
How did you meet him?
His brother stayed at my nan's B&B.
Of course.
And then said, sure, he's gigging. This was the Grand National weekend.
Okay.
And the brother said, oh, my brother Nicky's playing in the Liffey Bar in Renshaw Street in Liverpool this afternoon. And my nan was like, oh, my grandson Nathan wants to be a singer and he loves that type of stuff. Nicky sang country and a bit of folk and that type of stuff. So he says, bring him along. So I came along, mesmerised by Nicky. The place was hopping Sunday afternoon in Liverpool, Grand National weekend. Imagine, full of Irish. And I just thought, this is what I want to do. And I went home that night and told mum and dad I was leaving school. And they were like, you've got one more year to do and then you can leave. I hadn't done my GCSEs. I was going to just leave.
Okay.
They were like, no, we can be fined if you leave school right now. So, no, you're going to school.
Yeah.
Get your lunchbox. So I had to go back to school for a year. And then he mentored me the whole time. And then he went to Australia on a flight and got like a clot in his leg or something.
Okay.
Came home, fell asleep and died in his sleep. So it was really sudden. I remember getting the call. I was about to do a gig in England and... I was in bits. I was in absolute bits, you know.
You were about to do a gig?
They rang me at like 7 o'clock and I was on stage at 7:30.
Oh, no.
I was like, jeez, what am I going to do? And I was like, the show must go on. I can't, like, the place was full.
Oh, wow.
So Nan landed in with, I think it was a brandy and port. A large one and was like, get that down you. If you're going on, get that down you. So done that straight up and I was crying my eyes out. Like, it was just so
much. Of course you were, yeah.
So went on, done the gig. I couldn't sing any sad songs because I just knew I'd be like a mess.
Yeah.
So, and I was absolutely fine afterwards. Not absolutely fine, but for weeks and weeks afterwards, I was okay. Just went about life as normal. And then about 6 months later, it just hit me like a fucking ton of bricks, you know?
Yeah.
And just went into like depression mode and sad all the time. And like he was basically my best friend. I spoke to him every day for like 15 years. I was grand for 6 months and then it just hit me like no tomorrow.
Okay, so then were you like, when did you come to the point where you're like, right, I actually need to write about this?
I had to go and do a gig and I did a couple of writing sessions online and we wrote that song Wings to Fly and that was in memory of him.
Wow.
I wouldn't be religious at all, so I wouldn't go like praying and all that stuff, but
okay.
I do think there's probably some sort of afterlife and I'd like to think might meet him again
for at some sure stage,
you know.
Yeah, that's a lovely thought and I feel like with grief that is a nice way to kind of
something to cling on to, you know.
Yeah, and I think you need that.
Yeah,
like I'm interested now to know what is, I know your days are never the same and I suppose I feel like people in the entertainment industry is very different from like the corporate world.
Mm.
Like the corporate world is very structured, like the 5 a.m. club, everyone's up really early. Whereas this industry, like you don't really have a routine.
Yeah,
every day is so different. And then in general, we're kind of like night owls.
Mm.
So what, but give me a kind of an idea of what a day might look like for you.
Well, the day on tour in the UK is all generally the same unless there's interviews.
Okay.
We generally tour around on a tour bus.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll all fly into Liverpool, Birmingham, London, wherever the next gig is.
Mm-hmm.
And you will go, arrive to the venue around 12 o'clock. You'd probably be up at 5, maybe 4, to get the 6 a.m., 7 a.m. flight.
Okay.
From Belfast or Dub. Some of the lads fly from Dublin. Go to, say, Liverpool, meet the bus, travel to the gig. The crew get off, start unloading the truck, which is also there. We're living on a tour bus, though. So the truck will be there with all the gear. They'll unload, set up the gear. That'll take them 3 or 4 hours. We'll all piss off and go for food.
Drink Fafros.
And well, no, there wouldn't be any drinking that time of the day. That's after the gig.
Yeah.
Well, we go for a bit of lunch or something, walk around the town, wherever we are, and then go and do sound check around 4 o'clock. That'll take an hour, maybe. At most, and then hang about a bit, maybe get a bit of dinner, or drop a dinner, as the lads say, and then do the gig. 7:30 is the gig. It's really early in the UK for the concerts. Do an hour, take a break, do another hour, and then I'll go out and do a signing if we're allowed. Some of the venues allow signing, some of them don't. Some of them are charging a fortune nowadays because they have to keep staff on and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
which they never used to do. Do meet and greets, and then get on the bus. Sometimes it's an early night, sometimes it's watching a movie, sometimes it's playing cards, sometimes it's drinking.
So,
yeah, it depends. And everyone's on a different night. You know, some lads just want to sleep. Some lads want to go and watch Netflix in their bunk and just be on their own. And some lads are like, right, let's go to the pub until the bus leaves at 1. You know, so you might get 11 till 1, go out for 3 or 4 pints, come back to the bus. So,
what about when you're
that's
not
UK?
Okay. Oh, sorry. Okay.
Ireland. So Ireland is different because there's no tour bus.
Okay.
So generally, I'll drive, and JP, my guitar player, he lives in Enniskillen, so we'll generally travel together. A couple of lads live in, one of them Cavan, one of them Sligo. So we'll sometimes all just jump in my car and all go the gig, or they'll go on their own. Soundcheck in Ireland is a bit later. It's 5 o'clock, and then gig in Ireland, concert wise, is 8 o'clock. So you'll have a bit of grub between do the gig, do the meet and greet, go home, drive home. So you get home most nights, which is great.
Yeah.
There's no staying over and going out or anything, any of that. Unless we're doing like 2 nights in a place, or, you know, you could be in Cork and then Limerick or Kerry and then, you know, so you'll stay down somewhere in between the gigs. But generally it's home most nights.
Nice one. And then what about like your days off then, just at home in Enniskillen? What are you
days
doing?
Off, I try and get the gym as much as I can. You know, I wouldn't be a big gym head or anything, but I love to go and do 15-20 minutes on a treadmill and do a bit of weights.
You know that you mentioned there about you having the same friends for like over 11 years. So they've obviously known you. So it's nice to have that stability knowing that these people are your friends because of you and who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rather than when you became so famous.
Yeah. So, they don't treat me.
Yeah.
Anything, you know, I'm
just
one
of
them.
The lads.
So it doesn't matter to them, you know what I mean?
Well, then how does that affect, say, like if you are dating people? Is it are you a little bit more cagey of people because you're like, are you wanting to be with me? Because, like, you have to think that in your head. Like, surely, to God, you have to. Or maybe you don't. I don't know.
A lot of people always said, would you go out with a fan? And I've never been out with a fan, so it's, I don't know. I couldn't say yes or no, really. You know, if you were totally in love with someone, then yeah. But yeah, it probably is. I can imagine it being weird because they think you're someone else, as we were saying before. They'll have a preconception of what you are until they actually meet you.
Are you dating anybody now?
Not at the minute.
Okay, you're single Pringle?
Single Pringle.
Love it, I love it. So people at home are like, woohoo! Loving it. So then what's your ideal date then? I'm interested.
What would I love to do on a date?
Yeah, like what would you
mad about cinema. Love going to cinema.
Yeah.
I'm pigging out. I eat so much shite.
Yeah.
Honest to God. yeah, crisps and ice cream and nuts and sweets and jellies. But I would, you know, if I'm off, I would go to the cinema once a week, which is really weird. I know, but I would just watch anything that's on.
Yeah, that's cool.
Just because it's like an event for me to go out.
Yeah.
So probably a meal, cinema, And then a few drinks afterwards in the local pub.
Yeah.
With a bit of trad on, if there's trad on that day.
I can just...
Love trad music.
Do you?
Yeah.
I just... Yeah, definitely. People are going to be sliding into DMs being like, I love going to cinema. I love doing all those things. So you never know. Your future partner could be in the DMs. You never know. Oh, yeah. Do you have a type?
Don't think so, no. Not really.
Oh, thank God you said that, because I was so going to judge you if you said you did.
No, I don't. Don't.
I don't get that. Like, do you ever see on Love Island when they're like, what's your type? And they're like, you know, describing.
I think it's just if you get on. Like, if there's a bit of a spark, like, connection.
Yeah.
That's it.
This is the thing, though. Like, I genuinely, a hand on my heart, I genuinely don't get when people are like, I have a type and he has to be like this or she has to be like that. And I'm like,
it's quite a vain way of looking at it, isn't it?
I'm like, you're so shallow. Like, how can you actually think? Now, don't get me wrong. So I also have this other thing where I'm like, you can clearly tell when somebody is attractive looking.
Yeah, yeah.
However, if I got to know somebody and they were a prick, I'd be like, you're so ugly. Like, I couldn't see past them being a prick. Now, Nathan, I know, like, you don't really like getting deep about this, but I have to ask you about this. I have to. I have seen videos of you all over the internet, of you in bed with a really attractive woman. And I want to know, did you sleep with Philomena Begley?
I was wondering where that was going.
Did you sleep with her?
I couldn't possibly say. I'd have to kill you.
Come on.
It was the best 2 minutes of my life. Didn't help there was two cameramen in the room at the same time. Philly's son. Over there.
Sorry. So
that was good fun.
So you were filming a porno?
It was porno. It just happened to be a music video afterwards.
Can't remember it there. I couldn't get it up. It was really tough, all right?
Done country style.
Reverse cowgirl. You should have seen her go.
Rock me, mama. Literally.
Sorry. Did you ever sing that when you were sleeping with someone?
No,
definitely. You
definitely did. I've never done that.
100% no. Did. You did when you were drunk off the Bad Frogs. You did.
I've never done that, no. I friggin' will do now, though.
I love that. You're actually cracked. So the morning after the night before, like, what a great song, first of all.
That was the song, yeah, yeah. And then the video really made it.
Yeah.
So we were going to shoot a video for the song, and I was like, realistically, I should wake up, like, in a random place, like, in a confessional box or in, I don't know, someone's living room or something that I've broken into. And I was like, what about if we got, like, another character involved? Like, and I was like, could it be, like... I don't know, Marty Morrissey or something. Well, he could be the priest. And then I was like, no, do you know what would be really good is if Philomena Begley was a taxi driver who brought me home and I couldn't pay her. So then it shoots to us waking up the next morning in bed.
Oh, my
going,
God.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You know?
And this was you that came up with this?
Yeah.
I have to say, it was very funny. When I seen it first, I was like, oh, my good God.
But she's up for anything. Like, she is great crack.
Yeah, she absolutely adores you.
Yeah, we get on very well.
What, so Nathan, what do you cherish the most about the rise of your career?
Cherish?
Yeah.
Well, obviously fans wouldn't be here without them.
Yeah.
But who continue to buy tickets.
Yeah.
And buy the music. But they've given me the opportunity to then play amazing venues. We've done the London Palladium like 7 times.
Oh, what a venue.
Three Arena a couple of times and SSE in Belfast.
Yeah.
Played Crow Park for the Pope. That was pretty cool. Before Andrew Bocelli and Riverdance and Daniel was on.
Wow.
Earlier on that day. And that was really cool.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Just random gigs that never thought I'd do, you know?
Yeah. That's cool. Like, you have so much. You've achieved so much. Like, you're still so young and you've achieved so much. Like, you really have.
I probably don't take enough time to look back and appreciate everything.
I was just about to say that.
As much as I should, because I'm always striving for the next thing. You know, I'm always looking to what venue can I play?
Yeah.
You know, what we need to do better on, you know, getting more radio play there, or,
yeah,
you know, what's the next big thing? And I never look back. It's constantly like
keep going forward,
driving on, you know.
Why do you think we do that though? Like, why do you think we're always striving for the next?
I think it's addictive. I have a very addictive personality.
Do you?
Yeah, really. So I get addicted to the, I don't know, not success, but, you know, the feeling achieved something. And
yeah.
It's very, what's it, the thing it releases? The
endorphins.
Endorphins, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think I'm addicted, a very addictive personality, and just, yeah, get heavily, like, my obsession with cars got stupid.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? And then, I was obsessed with phones when I was a kid, and I'd know all the phone makes.
Yeah.
Yeah, BlackBerry.
That's so funny.
So yeah, I get very obsessed with stuff, you know?
It's fair enough. So how important is image to you then? To you personally, for yourself? I know we were talking there about like being attracted to other people, but what about your own?
Yeah, I'd image? Be conscious enough about it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it did used to be a lot lighter than it was. And then I constantly now look back at pictures and go, oh God, I was so skinny there. And I'm now like, oh, I need to lose a bit of weight all the time.
Okay.
I'll probably need to lose a little bit, but not like to the extreme that I was, because I was really skinny at one stage. Just picture me and I look like anorexic, like, you know what I mean? So, yeah. And then, you know, I'd be looking in the mirror now and you start and see lines where I never had them before. And
yeah.
And then my friends, some of them get Botox. I'm like, I should get Botox. You know, I was like, well, everyone's going to clearly see I've had it. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But
I don't think that's a big deal though. I feel like
it's not anymore. Not for men. I'm sure there's the amount of lads I know that get it.
Yeah.
So, and go on sunbeds and,
yeah.
You know, it's a thing now. It's not, I don't think it was 15, 20 years ago.
No.
But now lads do take the moisturize and they work out and they try and keep themselves looking good. And,
yeah.
You know, I've never worn fake tan in my life, even though I've been accused of it a load of times.
Okay.
So
you go on about 75 holidays a year with the family, sure you don't need to.
Yeah.
I woke up like this.
I tan really easy though, you know what I mean?
So yeah, I can imagine. I just think like when you're in this industry, how you look is commented on so much.
Yeah.
And you know what drives me mental when somebody says this? Like, oh, that person looks so old. And you're like, well, they're older. Like, what do you expect?
Yeah.
And then if they're getting Botox, they're like, oh, but they've got Botox. And it's like,
yeah.
Like, what do you want? What do you want from people? Like,
do you want them to look old? Or yeah. Do you want them to look like they've had work done?
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm glad that you said that you
yeah.
Are,
men, like, men are taking more of an approach now to trying to stay young looking. And
yeah.
Yeah. I think they definitely are.
You manage a band called Kjol, right?
Kjol, yeah.
What made you start that?
Because in lockdown, I was getting bored of my own voice and work than I was doing. And I was like, there's so much talent out there and there's a load of younger folk singers coming on the scene. Why don't we stick together a band and see how it goes?
Oh, wow.
So we held auditions in Drogheda in the TLT.
Right.
Put a call out to any singer musicians mm-hmm. out there that wants to be in a band. Held auditions, about 70 to 80 people turned up.
Wow.
We had to sit and audition them like X Factor, like
the new Louis Walsh here, huh?
Yeah, just don't bitch as much. But anyway, so myself and Liam McKenna, who was in a band years ago called Six,
yeah,
and is a manager, has been a manager and helping out.
So you and Liam are the manager?
Yeah.
Oh,
Liam,
wow.
Liam manages the band. I am there as the creator.
Okay.
And I just give my tuppence every now and again.
Okay.
Listen to the recordings and try and... And of course I bring the lads on tour for any big gigs that we do.
Yeah,
I
that's
let
brilliant.
Them open up. They sell the merchandise. They get seen by... They've done huge gigs with us over the last 18 months.
Yeah.
And now they've just added two new members, a drummer and a bass player. And this year they're going out doing festivals as a 6-piece band, which is like really up the whole energy of it. Like it's a full on, we done St. Patrick's Day with them on in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And they were brilliant. I hadn't seen them with the drummer and the bass player. And
yeah.
I was blown away. Thought it was really good. But individually, they're all really talented musicians. And then when they come together, it's 4-part harmony. So it's like 4 male voices singing at once. It's just like bang.
Wow.
It's really good. So if you haven't heard them, check them out, whatever camera you're looking at.
For sure.
Kjol band.
I've actually heard them. They were playing with or at your gig in the Borgosh, and they were incredible. Oh my God, they're unbelievable. Yeah, I'm they're not really sure. Good. What keeps you up at night, Nathan?
Stress.
Stress of what? From what?
Oh, just worrying about what is coming up this week and what I have to do. And I my brain goes into overdrive when I lie down.
So I then start thinking of everything and, oh God, I didn't do that. I didn't ring them.
Oh shit, I never sent that transfer. Oh, I did. And these all, I don't think of it during the day. The minute I lie down, oh, I'm like, oh God, I can't switch off.
Yeah.
You know, so I end up watching Netflix. I just watched the thing about Prince Andrew and Scoop. It's called. It's on Netflix. Really good.
Okay.
I've been watching that the last two nights, and that's put me to sleep. So I'm like, great. Don't be thinking of shit I have to do, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So how do you, like, what do you do? Do you write out a list or what? Like, how do you...
Then stuff pops in my head. Voice and notes. Then I have to go, oh, God, write note for tomorrow. Ring him. Pay them. Ring that guy. Tell her that you're going to pick up the laundry. Just all this random, stupid stuff. But it only happens at night, and then I have to sit up planning the next day then.
Yeah.
Of stuff I didn't do this day.
So, Nathan, what do you want to be remembered for?
I guess music.
Yeah.
Really. And bringing a lively show and a good energy to live performance on stage. I've always loved what I've done. And I hope I'll be able to do it for many years to come. I don't think I'm going to be here in like when I'm 80 still doing it. I can't imagine it.
Can you not?
No, I can't imagine that.
You're going to retire at like 35?
At
2 years.
What, next year?
Next year, yeah, exactly.
No, I'd say I'd retire when I'm like 60 or something, hopefully.
Is that the plan? Yeah. Is that you'd want to retire at 60
then?
Move
to Spain, live in the sun.
Yeah. Still bringing the family on holidays.
Yeah. Everyone. They can come out once a year.
Yeah. Fair play to you. Nathan, we had so much fun on this podcast.
Yeah, like thank you so much for having me.
Not at all. Like, we got deep. We had the best crack. But genuinely, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Continued success and well done on all you've achieved so far.